One of the more significant peoples during the Old Testament days, as it relates to language, were the Arameans. This is the key thing you need to remember relating to the Arameans. And we're going to talk about who they were, what their contributions were, especially one of them, and then what we can learn from them. On that second question, what their contributions were, what is the most significant contribution of the Arameans? It is their language. Good, you caught it. So in terms of who they were, looking at the genealogy, page 17 has a more detailed genealogical chart that will help us to understand where these various people came from. You'll see that they descended from Aram, therefore they are called the Arameans. And who was Aram? He was an ancestor of Nahor, the brother of Abraham. So in a sense, the Arameans are like distant cousins of Israel. We know from Genesis 25:20 that Laban and his brother Bethuel were Arameans. So here's the group of people that the Israelites, remember that Jacob went back there, his father Isaac went back to the land of the Arameans to marry their close relatives. So here we're talking about, you know, not distant relatives of the Israelites, but close relatives. In fact, Abraham himself in Deuteronomy 26:5 is called a wandering Aramean because he's tied on into that whole Aramean heritage. In terms of the geography, they were in three major areas. We normally think of them in northern Syria, upper Mesopotamia, right in the center of the ancient Mideast. And that's going to be pretty significant as it relates to language. But we typically today think of the Arameans as the people of Syria. In fact, our newer translations of the Bible refer to the land of the Arameans as the land of Syria, which has the same name today. And then we know that some of the Arameans migrated farther south east down to the cradle of civilization, down toward Ur. So there are actually three major areas, but we normally think of them earlier in the upper Mesopotamia area, and then later on in the Old Testament down towards Syria. How did they interact with Israel? They were actually, they are the ones actually that helped coin the term Hebrew. Tiglath-Pileser, not an Aramean, but an Assyrian, he said he crossed the Euphrates River 28 times. It was a very significant thing to be able to cross that river. And he notes that several times as he, and his other ones who followed him, other conquerors from Assyria, conquering the Euphrates River was quite a feat. Such a huge river like that, to be able to get your whole army across it, and then to be able to conquer people on the other side, was considered quite a feat at their time. And so what we find is that there was definitely a different civilization on the other side of that river. We know that Zobah up here in the north was an Aramean state. We know that Hadadezer joined the Ammonites. Remember, the Ammonites are over here. The Ammonites and the Arameans together to fight against Israel in 2 Samuel 10. And they were soundly defeated. There's not a single Aramean culture, which makes sense because they're kind of in three different areas. And they're not linked to a single political unit. So they didn't make those many contributions to political structures and practices in the ancient Near East. We also don't think of them much in terms of art and architecture. Their single most influence was the Aramaic language. And that actually lasts to our present day. Parts of the book of Daniel and Ezra were written in Aramaic. This is the third language that we often don't talk about that Scripture was recorded in. These portions of Daniel and Ezra are normally the legal literature written from the king and others. that was written in the trade language of the day. It would be like using your own language, your heart language, and then you see some international decree in English, and then you shift to English at that point. It would be kind of a similar idea there. So it was the interprovincial language of the Persian government. So even though the Persians conquered this whole area, they didn't switch the language from Aramean. It remained the main language of that day, all the way up until the Greeks. So we're talking hundreds and hundreds of years until Alexander comes in the 300s. Very, very significant. And yet it stayed into the New Testament era. Best we can tell is that Jesus taught in Aramaic. Jesus spoke Aramaic. And even the Eastern Orthodox churches use it as a liturgical language today. So it replaced many of the local languages. And one of the key things there was that the Arameans were the first to write alphabetic letters. Now that may not sound that strange to you and to me, because we're not used to reading English or most languages without the alphabet. Without the vowels. But they had all of these various letters for the vowels. Whereas in Hebrew, we don't even have the vowels coming about until AD 800 or so, 600 to 800. So they were very accustomed to reading words without vowels, which is kind of strange to our ears today. We get our word alphabet, Aleph Beit, Aleph Beit, from the word alphabet. The word alphabet comes from, actually going on back to this, it's a consonant alphabet with no vowel indication. Written from right to left, and like most of the languages at that time, this is kind of what it looks like. This is the Lord's Prayer, actually, in Aramaic right here. You start on the right and you read on over. It looks a bit like a cross between, it looks like Arabic and Hebrew got married and their kid was Aramaic, you know. But it was the lingua franca of the Fertile Crescent. In fact, the term Hebrew comes from the Aramaic word abar or habar, which means to cross over. Again, talking about the significance of the Euphrates River. So they were living on the north side of the Euphrates River. Haran was one of their key cities, and they pretty much stayed in this area. Those who crossed over the Euphrates River were called the people who crossed over, or Hebrew. Abraham was referred to as a Hebrew because he was a man who crossed over the river. So they were known by those who lived, the Jews were known by those, or the Hebrews were known by those who lived east of the river as Hebrews, the people who crossed over the river. And because that language was so significant, and there was, Jonah was actually able to be understood when Jonah crossed the river the opposite direction and he went and preached at Nineveh. So how could the people of Nineveh have understood the prophet Jonah had the biblical Hebrew tongue been different from Aramaic? These end up diverging later on, but there's a lot of similarity between Aramaic and Hebrew. In fact, you'll learn when you start learning Hebrew next year, you can go to the Aramaic portions of Daniel. It doesn't look that different. Of course, it's translated into Hebrew for you, but it's not significantly different. Those who get doctorates in Semitic languages in Hebrew will also learn Aramaic as well. It's not a big step going across that way. In fact, the name Jesus and the name Thomas or Tom are Aramaic names. So Jesus himself had an Aramaic name. For women, not too many of you ladies. I was trying to think if anyone in the class has an Aramaic name, but I can't. Oh, yeah, Rebecca? Oh, yeah, Rebecca. Okay, there's Rebecca. You have an Aramaic name. And so many of these names are adopted today. Laban, as I noted earlier, was an Aramean. And remember when Laban had this agreement not to cross over. They made this pile of wood there between Jacob and Laban. Genesis 31:45. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar, and Jacob said to his kinsmen, "Gather stones," and they took stones and they made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jegar Sahudatha. He's giving it an Aramaic name because he's an Aramean, but Jacob called it Galid. And so here we have these men at odds with one another, son-in-law with his father-in-law, and the Aramaic comes there as well. The Assyrians understood Aramaic. Not too surprising if it was the lingua franca. So when the Assyrians were outside the gates of Jerusalem, the Hebrews said, "Oh, speak to your servants in the Aramaic language, for we understand it. Don't speak to us in the language of Judah within the hearing of the people who are on the wall." Well, evidently the Assyrians also spoke Hebrew as well. At least these leaders did. We tend to think maybe that these were languages that other people didn't understand, but they actually did. And so people in Judah then came back from the Babylonian captivity, and they brought the Aramaic language with them. The letter was translated in Aramaic, was written in Aramaic, and it was translated when this letter was sent from Israel over back to the king. Babylonians also spoke Aramaic as well. So there you see it in the book of Daniel, Daniel 2:4. The astrologers answered the king in Aramaic. "O king, live forever. Tell your servants a dream and we'll interpret it." And even the writing on the wall was Aramaic in Daniel chapter 5. This is not Aramaic right here. This is cryptic English. But mene, mene, tekel, u parson, or and parson, is actually Aramaic. And Daniel, being a wise, skilled man, he was able to read this Aramaic. You didn't have to be, actually. Aramaic names we find in John's Gospel. The Pool of Bethesda in John 5 is Aramaic. Even Gabbatha, the pavement that you can visit today, the actual pavement of the time of Jesus that's under the city of Jerusalem, is Aramaic. Golgotha is an Aramaic name meaning the skull, John 19. And Jesus, of course, spoke Aramaic. In fact, he renamed Simon Cephas. Cephas is Peter. Cephas is Aramaic, Peter is Greek, or Petros is Greek. And so Jesus was speaking Aramaic as well. To refer to the Father as Abba was Jesus' way of referring to Aramaic. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani is Jesus speaking Aramaic on the cross. Now, they understood that. I don't think the Romans understood that, but the people of Jesus' day certainly understood it. Mary Magdalene referred to Jesus as Rabboni, Rabboni. The sign that was nailed to the cross above Jesus Christ is written, how many languages? Three. Do you remember what languages they were? Hebrew, Greek, Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic? Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic?
Latin.
No, Latin. Actually, one of them was Latin. So, looking closely at the sign, John 19:19 says, Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews." And then many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, really, Aramaic, Greek, and Latin. So the Romans there understood that Jesus was King of the Jews. The Greeks understood that Jesus was King of the Jews. And the Semitic peoples there, the Jews themselves, understood this because they were understanding Aramaic. So the Arameans were not as politically or culturally as well as militarily strong as some of the other Old Testament ancient peoples, but their lasting impact was their language. Language, obviously, is very, very important. And this language was spoken throughout the Mideast, and the Arameans inhabited the Fertile Crescent in the 14th century BC here, but didn't begin seriously influencing the region until three centuries later when they spread around. And we don't know them as a military force too much until there were some times when they did interact with Israel. Ben-Hadad and others like that. But the nation eventually fell to the Assyrians, to the Babylonians, but the language didn't fall. And isn't it interesting? Sometimes the conquerors, even though they're the victors, the conquerors are ones who they conquer the people, but they can't conquer that cultural influence of those people. And so they end up adopting the language of the people. We see the same thing happening after the time of Christ, or even with the Romans before the time of Christ. The Romans end up conquering that whole area, but they never really influence the eastern part of the Roman Empire with the Latin language. Very few people learned Latin. The Greek language had been entrenched by that time. And it lasted all the way up until the Islamic era, until the Ottoman, or not the Ottoman Empire, but when Muhammad and his forces came and conquered this area. So Arabic ends up replacing Aramaic. Yeah, it wasn't until the Greeks came several centuries later. But we still have Jewish practices today formed in Aramaic. The ketubah, the wedding contract, that's Aramaic. The get, that's the divorce contract, and the kaddish, the mourner's prayer. Even the Kabbalah, the Jewish mysticism, was written in Aramaic. And the Talmud ended up becoming a combination of Aramaic and Hebrew. The success of the Aramaic language should not be attributed to being merely a stronger language, but God ended up preserving this language, which brought a sense of unity. And think of it, that it's a very close language to Hebrew, so God gave the opportunity to ancient Israel to proclaim his word through this Aramaic language that lasted into the New Testament, and yet, unfortunately, they were not faithful to do that. They had the opportunity. Jonah took the opportunity, and he was wildly successful without any language issues. God had prepared the way for Israel to really be a much stronger influence in the Middle East than they ever were, which raises a question, well, why did they not have such an impact in the Middle East? And of course, I think we know the answer to that. They got caught up in idolatry, and they themselves weren't worshiping the true God, so they really didn't have the message to bring to the nations. But to me, it's a reminder of how the Lord has equipped us, so totally equipped us, to bring the gospel. There's no lack for us really to have an impact in our world, especially since all of us here speak English, which is really the international Aramaic of the world now, basically. We have so many benefits. So I pray that we'll make the best of what the Lord has given us.